for episode 373, dated Friday, August 16th, 2024.
You are listening to the In Perspective weekly podcast with Bob Branco and Peter O'Toole.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to In Perspective. My name is Bob Branco for episode 373, dated Friday, August 16th, 2024. Before we continue, let me introduce our good friend and colleague and co-host, Peter O'Toole. Peter, what's going on today?
It's actually kind of dreary in Coos Bay today. We actually might get a bunch of rain tomorrow, which is unusual for us for the summer, but I'll still take 65 degrees instead of whatever it is these days and where I used to live. So
we are in a sunny, dry weather pattern for the most part. Few showers here and there, but mostly dry all week. And we're not as humid as we were in recent past. We're about 75 to 80 for the most part. And it promises to be a pretty good weekend. Before we continue, let me thank those people who make it possible for In Perspective to be made available. We start out with our media outlets. Thank you for what you do. Raymond Gay, our producer and editor, thank you for what you do. And, of course, Jacqueline Sylvia from JS Web Solutions, thank you for archiving our shows on my website. Just go to www.brancoevents.com. Arrow down till you get to In Perspective Podcasts. Click on them, and you will notice most of our archived programs from latest to earliest.
Merci, Jackie.
I want to thank Herbie for being our host for today's program. Excuse me, that would be Brad. Brad normally streams on ACB Media 5. Today he is our host, and Herbie is doing the honor of streaming on ACB Media 5. And for those people who hear us on the streams, whatever stream we're talking about, let me give out my email address because you're not on my mailing list for the most part, may not know how to reach us here at In Perspective with your questions or thoughts about our programs and what we talk about. It's bobbranco93@gmail.com. That's bobbranco93@gmail.com. I want to say hi to three listeners, Roanna Backus, Deborah Joyce, and Linda Lambert. Thank you very much for listening and for your support. We appreciate it, as we do all of our listeners to In Perspective. Our guest today is Lori Scharf. First of all, I want to welcome her to In Perspective. Lori is a certified work incentive practitioner. Lori, my question is obvious after I welcome you to the show. How are you?
I'm good, thank you.
Thanks for being with us. Lori, what does a certified work incentive practitioner do exactly?
Well, basically, we typically work either through an employment network or with agencies and programs through Social Security that provide benefits counseling to individuals who are looking to enter or re-enter the workforce, depending on where you are in your life. And we have training not only in Social Security benefits, such as Social Security disability insurance and supplemental security income, but also in Medicare, Medicaid, supplemental nutrition assistance, SNAP, WIC, women, infant, and children, home energy assistance, things like that. And also, Section 8 and similar programs about that, like that. And we also have resources to look at, you know, when people have Medicaid waivers and how employment would affect their Medicaid waiver, which sometimes includes a housing subsidy, things like some of the mental health waivers and things.
So how does one become certified in this line of work?
I'm certified through Cornell. Mike Cadino, who I work with and live with, he is certified through Cornell and also through Virginia Commonwealth University. In addition, he also has a certification in working with youth. And so those are our two other areas that you can, basically the Cornell and the VCU certifications are very similar. And then the youth certification is a secondary certification that you can get. And that started, I would say about 3 years ago, 4 years ago. And that came out of the changes in WIOA to focus more on youth employment.
So Laurie, you balance what people can make with what they can save in Social Security. You want to make sure that they don't lose any money if they go to work. I'm sure that's part of what you do, correct?
I like to refer to it as managing your benefits and understanding,
right.
You know, basically sometimes it really makes sense to keep a part-time job, and other times, you know, if you're on SSI, I had a youth who came to me when he was 2 months away from his 18th birthday, and he already was working and a very, you know, minimal job at a fast food restaurant. And by the time he graduated college at 21 with a master's degree, he already was getting Social Security disability because he had enough work quarters and was not getting SSI. Oh, actually, he was getting SSI. He was getting a small SSI check. So, you know, really in his case, his goal was always to get off benefits, but it was to help him through college and things like that.
Ari, I'm going to tell you something that really disturbs me when I hear this, because as a blind person and a blind advocate and a former member of a consumer organization of the blind, I hear all the time about the unemployment rate of the blind, how high it is. It was 70% back in 1981. Now it's probably 70% today. And I often wonder why,
no,
with all the advocacy we do. Okay. But here's the thing. Talking about the unemployment rate, I actually know blind people who will say, I want to get a job, but I'm afraid to because I might lose my benefits. And these people are well qualified to be on the rolls, on the payroll.
Well, the current statistics on the unemployment rate of people who are blind and low vision, both out of the Big Data Project through, what is their name? I can't think of it. I just drew a blank. Well, both out of the Big Data Project, which was funded through the, Peter, do you know what I'm talking about?
I was saying VisionServe?
VisionServe Alliance, thank you.
Yeah, okay, I wasn't sure.
And VisionServe Alliance, as well as the data that is out of Mississippi State University, the National
NRTC.
NRTC Rehabilitation Training and Technical Assistance Program. The employment rate of people who are blind ranges between 43% and 48%.
That's a plus.
And that is for individuals 18 to 65. And the bigger problem is now we're able to measure, which we were not able to measure back when the original data came out in the 80s, but we're able to now measure the fact that 50% of people in that age range who are blind or low vision have not applied for a job within the last 30 days to 1 year. So they are no longer considered an active part of looking for employment.
This is why the unemployment rate in general, let alone of the blind, is rather deceiving, because people who are on or were on unemployment and are now off the rolls are not really counted.
Right.
And that's deceiving. That makes the statistic very, very deceiving. And by the way, I like what you said. I like that stat better than the stat that I've been hearing lately. But my biggest problem with this is that, like I said, I know blind people who are afraid to go to work because they might lose what they're on.
Right.
And that's sad.
It is sad. It's very scary. You know, I will tell you, I spent 16 years as a social worker in New York, and I have two major fears. One of them is becoming homeless, which I don't ever see happening to myself for financial reasons. But that being said, I have worked with many clients who have become homeless because of a catastrophe such as a storm, a fire, things like that. You know, everybody wants that security of, I know I'm getting a check on a certain day of the month and I know how much it's going to be. Whereas if I start working and I lose that check, then what? What happens? How long does it take to get turned on? I will say Social Security within the last 18 months to 2 years has made a lot of changes administratively so that we are seeing much more success rates with applications, better success, I should say. And, you know, really for people who are blind or low vision, a lot of times their complications with an application is you go to your general practitioner and have them fill out the application. Well, Social Security does not accept the medical authority of a general practitioner. It has to be from an ophthalmologist when you're blind.
So talk about sort of, first of all, how's business? How, you know, you have this certification. Are you overrun with clients? How are you doing?
Mike and I kind of work together. We tend to keep a smaller caseload. So that's just, you know, the way we want it, but we want to be able to really work with somebody with what they want, you know, to be able to be there when they say, okay, I have a job interview tomorrow. Let's sit down and do a role play of an interview because I haven't interviewed in 5 years, you know, or the ability to take a phone call from somebody because they just had a confrontation with a colleague and, you know, they need to have a talk with somebody and, you know, get refocused and get back to work and back on the floor doing their job. So it's a much smaller scale. I will tell you that employment networks in general, the rate of success is a little higher in some areas of the country than Department of Rehab. And again, that's probably because some of them are able to give more individualized attention. Some of them focus on specific types of disabilities. I've been doing this since 2012 and Mike has been doing it since 2017. And, you know, we kind of really have a handle of what is going on in different areas, you know, but it's basically business is what I want to take on.
So talk about, I know this is sort of a hard question to answer, but talk about sort of your typical client that walks through your door virtually. I assume much of this work is done virtually on the phone or via Zoom or something.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Okay. We are a nationwide employment network. We work through the National Disability Institute American Dream Employment Network. So the American Dream Employment Network basically manages the program and gives us access to their secure database so we can exchange data directly with Social Security in a secure manner. I would say our average client is probably in their 30s. It's kind of a mixture of people that have left work because of a disability or people that have never worked previously. It's really a wide cross section. So yeah, and we have a pretty good rate of success. About 70% of our clients are actively working and have been actively working for more than a month.
Your jurisdiction is nationwide?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, not all employment networks are nationwide. Basically, you have to kind of be vetted by the company, by the American Dream Employment Network. They wouldn't let you, you know, if you started doing this tomorrow after you got your certification, they wouldn't let you go nationwide right away.
So what kind of challenges do your clients experience? You mentioned some of them. It's a balance between benefits and work income and all that good stuff. But it sounds like you also other stuff that's work related, which kind of surprised me. You help them with job interviews and workplace mm-hmm. challenges. And so talk about sort of the range of stuff you might work with a client.
So we actually have somebody who started out back in 2017, and technically she's not a client anymore, meaning that I don't get paid to serve her anymore. And when she came to us, she was a woman in her mid-40s. Her children had moved out, and she was on SSI because she left the job market and then got sick and didn't have enough work quarters for Social Security disability. And she went back to work, started out as a aide in a classroom, and she now is off benefits, has taken her certifications through New York State to move up in positions, and she now is working on an 11-month position, meaning she's working a 10-month school year, and then during the summer, they keep her on to work summer school. So to me, that's a pretty good success story. She has both physical and psychological disabilities, so it was a bit of a struggle for her at the beginning to figure out, you know, is she really going to be able to do this? But she knew that economically it paid for her to go back to work more than it did to stay on benefits.
Do you handle the issue of reasonable accommodations?
Yes and no. And I say it that way because that's a conversation that really needs to be had with an individual prior to them going to an interview, prior to them starting their first day of work. Reasonable accommodations are an interactive process between the individual and the employer. I have no legal binding obligation to work on reasonable accommodations. So I work more with the client to empower them to come up with, you know, what they might need in an employment setting and how to request it.
It's been my experience, Lori, working with college students with disabilities, which may be a different audience than you work with, or maybe not, that many of these folks really don't have a sense of what, in fact, they need to be successful.
No, I agree with you. Yeah, that's a big issue.
So talk about that. How do you help people sort of figure that out?
So, you know, I really would have a conversation with somebody when they said to me, okay, well, you know, this is the type of work I want to do. So, okay, you want to work at a donut shop? Do you want to make the donuts? Do you want to work the cash register? What do you want to do? Do you want to clean the tables in the donut shop? Let's talk about, based on your vision, what adaptations might you need? You know, if it means actually making the donuts and watching a fryer, do you have the ability to do that? If not, what are some accommodations that you might have to look at? You know, I actually did have somebody in that very position and figured out really quick that that was not where they wanted to be. Started working the front end of the donut shop and then actually got a higher paying job working in a bakery making bread in an industrial bakery. So, you know, the vision was less of an issue in the industrial bakery because he wasn't dealing with fryers and, you know, things like that. But really had to have some really hard conversations about, you know, think about when you go into a supermarket, how does the lighting affect your low vision? But again, those are conversations you have before somebody gets to that interview.
And how are you different from or similar to the Voc Rehab system? It sounds like you overlap sometimes.
Different, I would say, is that we don't really pay for things. We can, through the American Dream Employment Network, access grants of up to $500 if somebody needed like a certification paid for or something like that. But we just don't have the finances to pay for, you know, a Braille embosser or a copy of JAWS for somebody to use, you know, JAWS Professional or something like that. It's not in our budget. So similarities. You still sign a plan for employment with us. We have milestones. Social Security basically requires that if you're not actively looking for work, and actively meaning that you are not maybe taking classes or applying for jobs and documenting to us that you're actually applying for a job, you know, we have the ability, we have to close your case within 60 days if there's no activity.
So talk about, there's a lot of talk about reforming SSI and SSDI to make it more work friendly. Yeah, NFB, as you know, came up with a resolution, and sort of talk about what you, how you think the system might be improved to make it more likely that people can enter the workforce.
Yeah. Well, the bill that NFB has introduced, I think also focuses on, for Social Security Disability Insurance, SSDI, to not have a cliff, meaning that basically in 2024, if your earnings, if you've used your trial work period, your expanded, your grace and cessation months, and your earnings continue to be at or above substantial gainful activity, which in 2024 is $2,590 gross, you would lose your benefits. So basically what they want to do is make it so that it's similar to supplemental security income, SSI, where you gradually lose your benefits. So based on your earnings, you then with a supplemental security income, at a certain point, for every dollar, every $2 you earn, you lose $1 of your benefits. So
$25.90 per month, I assume.
Right now, that's the figure for Social Security Disability Insurance, yes.
Okay.
But SSI is quite a bit lower if I have my
numbers
things correctly.
Yes, Social Security Disability is quite a bit lower, but you need to remember a couple of things. You need to remember to use your work incentives.
You mean SSI is lower.
SSI is lower. The annual, the federal benefit rate is $943 per month. That's what an individual would get if there's no state supplement. But then when you start working, as a blind individual, you have blind-related work expenses. So what are blind-related work expenses? Those are expenses such as dog food for a working guide dog, transportation to and from work, transportation to and from medical appointments, co-pays that you may have, taxes that you pay. So, and you know, your federal and state taxes that you pay. So basically all of those offset your income with SSI as blind related work expenses. So you really, you know, and then if you're a student and you're 22, you know, you're 21 years and younger, you have the student earned income exclusion, which right now for individuals on SSI, that could be, you could be earning $2,290 a month for an annual rate of up to $9,230 before it affects your benefits, which is quite a bit of money.
So how might the system be improved? The sort of overall system.
Overall?
Yeah.
My personal opinion is I think that all of the benefit systems should be linked. So Section 8, supplemental nutrition assistance.
Food stamps.
Supplemental nutrition is what used to be called food stamps. So, you know, if everything could be linked, it would be so much easier because all the systems would talk to each other, and they keep saying, oh yeah, we're going to be able to do that at some point, but it really doesn't happen that way. You can report your earnings to Social Security directly now for individuals on SSI and SSDI. You can report your earnings directly online. The problem comes into play though, when it comes to things like impairment-related work expenses if you're on Social Security Disability, or blind-related work expenses if you're on SSI, there's no way to report those electronically. So you still have to submit those on paper. So you know, it would be good if there was a way for that, those to be also submitted electronically.
In the tax world, they're called write-offs.
Well, yes, they would be. If you're going to use them as write-offs for your taxes, you then cannot use them as an impairment-related expense or a blind-related work expense.
I have to tell you, I'm really, I mean, this is new to me. I knew that you could work with Social Security, report your income online. I was not aware that you can do the same thing with your expenses. That strikes me as
no,
just,
you cannot.
You can't.
Right. You cannot. I said it would be good if you could.
No, I heard what you said. I just find that bizarre is what I'm trying to say.
It doesn't make sense, right?
It doesn't make any sense. Yeah.
I guess it's because you have to state what they are and then you have to provide them like original receipts and thing, yada, yada, yada. You know how it is. They never make it easy.
No, this sounds like we could get very deep into the weeds, which probably isn't help anybody at this point. Yeah, exactly. So what prompted you to get to do this kind of work? You said you were a social worker for a while. What prompted you to become this certified work incentive practitioner?
Really, it my interest in the area, because I worked a lot with clients who had, you know, different types of economic difficulties. And very often there was mental health issues, substance abuse issues, domestic violence, whatever going on in the household, all these other stressors. And, you know, maybe there was a child who was disabled and they weren't getting benefits because the parents didn't even understand how to apply for benefits for a child. You know, so I was constantly contacting, you know, different legal programs in the area. And when Cornell formalized their program, I had been following Ray Cibula and Ed Lopez, who both used to be out of Cornell, for years, going to any trainings that they did. And when they formalized the training, I kept saying I was going to take it. And finally, I was able to take it in 2012. And then when I took it, we had to get a case, find a case on our own, and actually take that case from start to finish. And I had some difficulties because my individual got affected by one of the major storms that hit the East Coast. And we had to take that person all the way to the point of working, and we had a year to do that. And we had to turn in all of our documentation, and that, you know, redacting any personal identifying information, of course. Now they've changed it. In addition, I also had to take an exam. I don't remember. It was multiple choice, and I had a couple of days to take it. It's an open book because you can always look stuff up online, but it was not an easy test. And yeah, so it's a pretty rigorous certification. And so it really did help me both in my job as a social worker. And then I did start vending as well, doing social casework and benefits counseling for the New York State Commission for the Blind when I lived in New York.
So how, let's see, Bob, how are we doing for, is it time for questions?
Yeah, free notifications, calendar.
Bob, can you hear me?
I can hear you fine. Okay. Lori, what we're going to do is we're going to turn festivities over to our participants. I'm sure a lot of people who are listening right now would like to talk with you and ask you questions about what you do. Maybe they can be helped as well.
Sure. I would just like to say, though, it is kind of hard to give very specific personal information. You know, I don't want to have to ask questions that would make somebody have to reveal certain types of information. So people are certainly welcome to reach out to me after the show as well.
Okay, so let me just reiterate. I'm Bob Branco, and he's Peter Alchul. You're listening to In Perspective with our special guest, Lori Scharf, certified work incentive practitioner. I am now going to ask Brad if there are any hands raised.
Yes, we do have a couple. First up is Tony.
Tony, yes, he's also from New York.
I am. Lori, I'm Tony Candela here.
Hi, Tony, I know you.
Yes.
Small world, huh?
Well, it's a big world, but you know, when great people come together, they just come together. What can you say? So if I may, I just want to kind of outline like the history that's in the structure that's going on here, because there's like three different big giant federal systems operating at the same time. The vocational rehab system, which is, you know, the one that's been around the longest and it's the biggest. Then there's the Social Security system. That's what Lori's connected to. And then there's like the entire Department of Labor system. And so the voc rehab system, we'll just leave that alone. That's going on, give or take tweaks here and there, the way it always has. But in the late 1990s, these two other things happened. The first one was the Social Security Administration got kind of tired that a lot of the people receiving Social Security disability and SSI weren't getting jobs. And quite honestly, we're not going off of benefits. And this was their motivation. So they said, you know, we're going to do something. So they passed this thing called the Ticket to Work and Work Incentives
Act. Opportunity Act. Yep.
Opportunity. Yeah. And so I think that's where you're connected to, Lori. Then the Department of Labor decided all the programs, the unemployment programs and other programs were all scattered, and they unified them under something called the Workforce and Incentives Act, which then got revised in 2014 to the Work Innovation and Opportunities Act. And that just basically unifies all of the Department of Labor programs. And that you're connected to, Lori, you're with one of the agencies that Social Security relies on. I'm going to ask you this in a kind of a, you don't consider it a challenge, but just think of it as conceptual. Your job is to get these people to go to work by convincing them that it is more advantageous to them financially to go to work if they take into account all of the incentives that Social Security keeps building in to try to get people off the rolls, because it's those very incentives that have kept people on the rolls.
Correct.
So you've got to get them off the rolls. Are you rewarded in any way for getting anybody off the rolls? Like if they go completely off of benefits, they got a really great job and they go, is there any payment incentive for, you know, folks that work in your end of this whole system?
We are only paid when somebody has worked at the 30-day mark, the 90-day mark, and then there are some milestone payments after that, and depending on what their benefits are, depends on when and how much we are paid. So, you know, if I have somebody that calls me up and says, I want to work because I have this bill, I spent too much money at the holidays on my kids, I'm going to have a heart to heart with them and say, like, do you really want to work, or are you only interested in work because you now have this big bill? And if my little antennas tell me they're only looking to pay off that bill, I'm going to tell them, well, I'm sorry. You know, it doesn't make sense for me to invest my time in working with you. I'd rather put in time with somebody who's motivated to work long term.
I'm glad they scale.
And if I could just add the other thing I thank you for that historical piece. You know, of course I've lived it and I know it. So, but also if I could just say that your local Department of Labor, for any of your listeners, is a fabulous resource. I will tell you, as a blind person, many of them are not very accessible, but that being said, they all should have in them technology that can be made accessible using a screen reader at their local office. Many of them, starting during COVID, and several have continued allowing people to log in to the databases that are available through the Department of Labor remotely from your home. So that is a fabulous local resource. You can't get any more local than that.
Okay, audio now.
And hopefully every place in the country has this resource. That would be nice.
Yes, they do. They are required to. And so any of the programs, and there usually is a liaison with the Commission for the Blind, or if it's a, you know, a state where it's not blindness specific, there usually is a liaison. Actually, we did a pretty good piece with the ACB Rehabilitation Task Force. We had somebody from Oregon and somebody from New York do a presentation during the convention. So that, I don't know if it's been podcasted yet, but it was a pretty good piece, and they had some interesting tips and stories. And
well, thank you.
That was a good session, by the way. I hope that when it comes available that we, that folks listen to it.
Thank you, Tony.
And thank you, Laurie.
Thank you.
Moving right along. Brad, who's next?
Next we have Annie. Go ahead, Annie.
Another New Yorker, or former New Yorker.
Hello. Hi, Laurie.
Hello.
Peter.
Hi.
Hi. So I'm going to go on a different direction than Tony did. My direction would be, who would be best suited for a position as a work incentive practitioner? And how long will it take, if they decide to, how long would it take to, for them to complete their certification?
Ooh, you know, I have not looked to see what the current criteria is for certifications, for the initial certification, because I'm in a 5 years, every 5 years I have to complete 60 continuing education credits. So, in different, you know, in areas related to disability and employment and social security, things like that, financial literacy. I would say it would probably take 3 to 6 months to complete the certification. And then basically, you know, you could start working in the field. We do get referrals directly through the American Dream Employment Network, which is, you know, one reason I went with them, so that I don't really have to do the legwork. They send people to me.
Right.
You know, so I'm not paying for advertising, but you know, there are some people that are really doing this on a much larger scale. This is not my only job. I just want to say that I do have other work that I do. So, and so if it were my full-time job, I probably would be more actively going out to libraries and like soliciting, I guess you would say, looking for people that, you know, could be potential candidates to work with. But it's a great job in the sense that you learn a lot about people, and you really can be supportive in helping people better themselves financially and really work towards bigger goals.
Hmm. Yeah, no, I actually got my certification quite a few years ago, but it wasn't for me because I just found that I'm not a numbers person. And I think, correct me if I'm wrong, that you have to have some aptitude with, you know, liking to work with numbers and that kind of stuff. Is that?
Excel is my friend. I'm not a numbers person either. The joke used to be when I worked in New York, don't go out to lunch with a social worker because it takes us too long to figure out the tip. You know, but yeah, so it's very, the training is very policy oriented.
Yeah.
So if you're bored by policy, it's not for you. But really when it comes down to it and you start getting clients, there's a lot of other skills that come into play.
Like what?
Really working with people to come up with goals that are achievable, helping them to work on achieving those goals. And, you know, sometimes having some hard conversations about, okay, you know, this didn't work out for you. Why didn't it work out for you? You know, I had somebody that was working in a field with animals and was bit by an aggressive animal. And thought they were never going to go into what they were, that particular area again. We did some talking about it. We did some exploring, and him and a family member went and did some exposure therapy and kind of got him to a point now where he's now, instead of doing like animal care, he's doing animal walking dogs. So it's similar, but it's enough different for him, and he gets to meet the dogs and interact with them on their terms. And then he takes them for a walk and he's okay with that and he's doing fine. So we just had to regroup and look at the goal, and he's working with a company that pays him a legitimate salary, you know.
That's wonderful. Yeah. So people skills is really important.
Oh yeah.
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 Yeah. Well, thank you.
Thank you very much, Annie. Brad, has anybody else raised their hand?
Yes. Next we have a New Mexico area code ending in 970. So I assume that's Beth.
It probably is. Hi, yeah. Beth.
Hello, Lori. I have a question for you. Well, several different questions. Okay. So I would like to go back to work, and I wouldn't mind. That seems really nice because you get to deal with people, a work incentive practitioner,
mm-hmm.
or whatever you call it. Now, I've never heard of that over here in New Mexico. I assume they have them, but nobody ever talks about them.
Yeah, I'm sure. The local Department of Labor probably has somebody who is certified, because they do require that there's at least one person now.
In each state?
In each Department of Labor, because it has to do with the WIOA reauthorization.
And a lot of these folks over here don't think that blind people can do the jobs.
Mm-hmm.
And then my daughter is only 45, and she lost her Social Security, and she really can't work, but they keep giving her the runaround. Now she can see, but she has that Hashimoto's disease. I don't know how I could help her with any of that. Is there any way that somehow I could have your contact information?
Yeah, let me just ask you, has she applied within the last year?
Yes, yes.
Okay,
they gave her the runaround just last week.
Okay, she should probably reapply or ask that her get your congressional representative involved. If you have her file stamped congressional, basically it kind of puts some fire under their tushies. You know, they have had recent changes to some application approval processes, and they're going back and looking at cases that have been denied over the last year to year and a half, and really making some favorable decisions. So she probably wants to take advantage of that.
I mean, she said that Social Security worker was very nasty. She wouldn't give her a supervisor. She wouldn't do anything. And she told her, you know, that she was just giving her the runaround real mm-hmm. awful.
Yeah, I'm not surprised. I always say they act like it's their own purse strings sometimes.
Yeah, and so.
Yeah, I mean, so the other thing is she could get a protection and advocacy firm in your area involved as well. That might be of assistance.
Okay, she's working with someone from Independent Living, but I don't know. I don't know how that's going to work out. But yeah, I would love to have your contact information. You could give it out.
Yeah, sure. Mike can give my email address. Do you want me to do it now or at the end?
Both.
At the end, I guess. And you wouldn't happen to have a business phone number? I know you could get out, because I don't have a computer at this moment.
So I need to make sure this is legal under ACB community standards, because I don't want to get
the business phone numbers are, they say.
Yeah, we're good as long as it's not personal.
Okay, fair enough.
Okay, so it's 540.
Oh, yeah.
471-8113.
Oh, okay, cool. Well, thank you very, very much, 571. Okay. Cool.
Thank you, Beth.
That's the end of hands for now. Oh, I'm sorry.
So Lori, Beth's question reminds me of something. I'm curious to know what your take on this is. The whole issue of mental illness and the whole issue of sort of, I'm drawing the nihil blank, diseases that they can only be managed and not cured per se. Autoimmune diseases, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
How does that play into all of this? Because it seems to be all those things are increasing.
Yeah, it's interesting that you raise that. You know, I started my field as in social work, working in the LGBTQ community, and, you know, at a time when, you know, drugs to treat HIV and AIDS were just coming about, Social Security no longer considers HIV a reason for receiving Social Security disability or SSI. So there has to be additional comorbidities, additional disabilities, secondary, either as a result, you know, of the condition, or, you know, maybe just something else that somebody has, usually to become qualified for Social Security based on HIV and AIDS. So there are lots of changes. That being said, things like compassionate allowances, which are certain conditions that Social Security deems to be incurable, meaning that they can fast track your application for those conditions. They are, I remember when they started out with 25 or 50 conditions, and now they've got a couple of hundred on that list. So, you know, things do change. The biggest thing I would say is really sit down and, whatever your disability is, know what the procedure and operations manual for Social Security says about qualifying for disability. So for a lot of the mental health conditions, there are, you know, there needs to be so many hospitalizations within a certain period of time, or so many visits to a mental health professional. You know, it's interesting, because as a social worker, my case notes would not hold water on a Social Security case. It could only be considered supporting documentation. Same as a certification of legal blindness from the Commission for the Blind is only considered supporting documentation. It can't be actual documentation. So it's important to understand the little nuances that occur within the regulations.
Laurie, let me see if I can connect all the dots at this time. Here's an all-important question that I'm sure some people are also waiting for somebody to ask. How does one qualify for your services? What are the qualifications that somebody needs to have in order to get services from you?
They have to be on Social Security Disability Insurance, SSDI, or Supplemental Security Income, SSI, and interested in going to work.
That's it?
That's it.
Okay.
So I want to go back and have you sort of talk about, you know, you obviously service lots of people. What I'm hearing is that mental illness is spiked over the past few years. Are you experiencing that, and how does that impact the way you work with folks trying to get back to work?
I would say a lot of my cases are people with mental health issues, but they also have secondary disabilities as well. So it's really a mixture.
But I guess when you're counseling folk, you know, with, you know, fill in the blank, a mental health condition, how does that impact the way you counsel folks and assist them to get back in the workplace?
Well, you know, I'm going to be cognizant of, you know, if they have triggers, what are their triggers? What are things that, you know, they need to focus on? Maybe if they have a behavior that presents that could be an issue in an employment setting, having a discussion with them about that. You know, I have somebody that's obsessive compulsive, and she also has attention deficit disorder. So really, you know, when we have conversations and she starts to go off track and fixate on one of her fixations, you know, I bring her back and I say, you know, whatever your name is, let's think about what were we just talking about. Let's go back to answering the question that we were working on. You know, these are things you're going to have to do in an employment setting. So, you know, it's really about taking the time and figuring out what somebody needs in the moment.
And also presumably helping her prepare for the challenges she might experience in the workplace, mm-hmm. given those mental illnesses, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
How would she deal with the trigger at work? I'm thinking of folks with PTSD, for example. you know, who, you know, have to sort of figure this stuff out. I'm not an expert in this at all, but I would imagine for some jobs, you know, you have to figure out how you're going to handle triggers, as you said.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. Any hands raised by any chance?
Not right now.
Not right now.
Feel free to interrupt us, Brad, when that happens.
All right.
Thank you. Okay. Yeah. So Laurie, does your work service that you provide, does it have a company name?
We call it Access to Employment and Information. And that's because I always say, like, it's not always about the employment. It's about getting information to figure out what you want to do. You know, for example, a couple of weeks ago, I had somebody reach out and she was reaching out on behalf of her daughter, who was 22 years old and had a developmental disability. And they had recently moved, but, you know, after 6 months of not hearing anything from the Department of Rehab, I was able to give her the phone number of somebody that's a little higher up. So she just wasn't leaving a voicemail for somebody on in a general mailbox. And 2 weeks later, she called me back to thank me because she actually got her daughter into a day program. And really, that's kind of more what her daughter needed than work.
And that's the challenge you figure out. Cause I would imagine some folks, for whatever reason, really can't work or can't, or have a hard time finding, you know, a harder time or something. And you have to make, mm-hmm. to help folks make that determination.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, I had a truck driver contact us and he said, I need somebody to ride with me because I need that person to help me control my impulses when I'm not able to control them. I have my, you know, professional license, but I'm not able to control my behaviors. And, you know, I basically said, like, one, we don't provide job coaching. You know, if you're interested in an employment network that might provide job coaching, you know, you could look around for another one, but, you know, I don't know of anybody that's going to really want that type of responsibility.
Hey guys, we got Tony's got his hand up and so does Annie, and we are at 5 till the top of the hour.
Thank you.
Tony, you're next.
Oh, no, now I'm muted.
Well, Laura, I'm just wondering, do you have a particular sales pitch that works or doesn't work well for blind consumers who are afraid if they go to work, you know, just never know what's going to happen until you get on the job a lot of times and things might go wrong. They might lose their job and they'd be so afraid to lose the job. But do you have a sales pitch you use to get them to take that chance?
Well, I would explain that there is what's called an unsuccessful work attempt, which basically means now Social Security says if you've had the job for less than 30 days and it ended, it's considered an unsuccessful work attempt. So that those earnings would not get counted to penalize you. For example, if you were on Social Security disability insurance as using a trial work month, if it was above the trial work month amount, which for 2024 is 1110.
Okay.
And, you know, I would also explore with them, like, you know, if you do go to work, you'll have this extra income, you know, things like that. But for some people, it is a hard decision.
All right. Thanks, Tony. Annie?
Hey, what about financial literacy? Do people struggle with that? And do they struggle with that more or less than some of the other things that you work on them with your time with them? And, you know, what would you recommend? Like, are there any like free resources out there for somebody to like take a workshop that's free, or how do you advise them on that?
Well, I'm a big fan of credit unions. Credit unions frequently have training workshops for members of their credit union. Credit unions, unlike commercial banks, also frequently, you know, don't have account limits and things like that. So I kind of always, not always, but a lot of times we'll have a discussion about you know, understanding things like the difference between a credit union and a bank, understanding how to save in an ABLE account.
We have less than a minute.
Things like that. So financial literacy is definitely something. I also recommend Penny Forward for people who are blind or low vision. I've done some work with them in the past. And
I've heard of them. We've had somebody on our show from there. Mm-hmm. I forgot the name. We are out of time, unfortunately. Thank you, Annie. Laurie, one more time, your phone number or business email address.
Sure. My business email is just my Gmail account. So it's L-O-R-I, S as in Sam, C, H as in Harry, A-R, F as in Frank, at gmail.com. And my business phone is 540-471-8113.
And that's two Fs. That's two Fs,
yeah,
correct?
Yeah, S-C-H-A-R-F-F.
Yes, correct.
Okay. Perfect. Thank you, Laurie, for being with us today. And you provide a wonderful service. Hopefully people will benefit from it and contact you and become employed.
You're welcome. Have a great
day.
All
right. You take care, everybody. Go safe with God's abundant blessings. See you next week on In Perspective. Bye for now.